Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, Jaguar here. I hope you're enjoying the series so far. This is a space for discussion, reaction, and change, with conversations between myself and the dance music community about issues that matter to us most. Today, I'm going to be speaking to Palestine's techno pioneer, Sama. Over the years, she's poured her heart into cultivating an underground scene, which has led her to become one of the world's most loved DJs, known for her punchy techno sets, esteemed Radio 1 Essential Mix, and her stellar Boiler Room set in 2018. Sama was arrested in December last year after DJing at an event for Beatport in the West Bank, at a historical site where many believe the Prophet Moses is buried. The event had reportedly been approved by the Ministry of Tourism, but Sama was arrested and eventually released on bail after 8 days in jail. Sama garnered a flood of support from the music industry, including petitions pleading for her innocence and demanding her release. Let's hear about the case in Sama's own words as she joins me from her home in Palestine. Welcome to Utopia Talks. So Sama's here. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here and talk about something so sensitive. I was so compelled hearing about your story at the time, at the end of last year, and honestly, I'm honoured to be talking to you today. So should we start with, can you tell us what happened at the end of December last year in your own words?
First of all, thank you for having me. It's been such a messy couple of years, really. Unbelievable. Started with Corona, ended up in prison. So it happened last year. I was filming the residency for Beatport, and I was using different locations in Palestine to do so with the help of the Ministry of Tourism. And one of the shows just went south. We were filming in a compound which had a mosque, a bazaar, and an area and a hostel, etc. And some guys apparently heard about the filming, thought it was a party, and decided that it's not appropriate to the place. So instead of them telling us calmly, they decided to come and start yelling. But the thing is that the story was also growing meanwhile. So it started with there are some settlers taking over the location and destroying it, you know, and then it turned to that it's some people just trying to hurt Muslims. And then they were like, oh, no, it's to this Palestinian person. So when they came, they were angry because they thought it was completely a different thing. So there was this public, it just went completely viral without us knowing. Like, we barely, like, by the time I got home, it was viral. So I didn't even see it go viral.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, everybody in Palestine was talking about it and asking the government to do something. So the government did what anybody would do in a public opinion case. They come and follow the leads, you know? So I expected that next day they were going to come pick me up to talk. And they picked me up, but instead of talking, I was like, they talked to me, but I discovered in the talking that I was getting detained, actually. And it wasn't just talking. And then I went to prison for 8 days. Wasn't fun. But with that, we were going through investigation every day. We were going to courts, to all these things, until all the data was presented to the DA. And they just let me out. And of course, there might be a trial and everything, but they agreed to let me out on bail because the investigation was done and they didn't need me anymore. And yeah, wow. That's what happened.
And so you're at the moment, you're just waiting to hear if you'll have a trial in the future at some point.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. I spent 4 months with a travel ban and I had to go to the police every week to sign my name on a paper that I didn't run away. But after 4 months and it taking forever, you know, we kept appealing. We kept like doing an appeal for the bail and for the travel ban. And finally, they agreed to remove it.
Okay.
Because obviously, I'm not trying to run away from the case. I never ran away from the case. You know, from the first day they came to me, I went with them. And I was always straightforward and always direct with everything. You know, and in my history, I've never had anything that I messed around with. So, you know, in good faith.
Yes. Yeah, of course. And yeah, a very like unique position to be in. And I actually saw one of the videos from when the people who were upset that you were DJing in this area, which is a historical site. I saw a video and like it, because I heard like explosions of like flares or fireworks as well. And then it was all dark and shouting and it was really scary to watch. So how was that experience for you?
It was terrifying.
I bet.
Honestly, like we've been shot at so many times by the Israeli army, but having the people that usually are fighting on your side being fighting you, that was more terrifying. Because I think also with the army, we have, there's a purpose of the fight, you know, you're fighting for a reason. But in this one, you just didn't know what to do because you're not going to fight them back. Mm. It was terrifying, especially that we all know these fireworks guns, they don't really exist that much. Palestinians make them because we don't have weapons to fight the Israeli army. So they make random weapons. So they usually throw them at the police or at the Israeli army. Yeah. So it was the first time getting shot at us. It was terrifying, but it calmed down quickly as well. So thank God nobody got hurt. Mm. Nobody was hit at all, not from us or from them. They were really mad. And that is one of the reasons why we were, and me especially, the minute I saw how mad they were, like you could see it in their eyes. You've done something wrong without them telling you what you did. You know, you've hurt this person. Mm. And from the way he was yelling at me, I kept apologizing. And I'm like, I'm sorry, just listen to me. I don't mean to offend you. I don't mean to do what you think I am doing. And eventually that calmed them down and we talked about it. And we kind of reached an agreement that maybe we made a mistake and we're sorry, but it wasn't an intentional thing. You know, I didn't come here to bother you or to offend you. And that helped a lot in the case in general and with the people here, because at the end of the day in Palestine, I don't know if you know, but Israeli settlers and the army and the government, they constantly go into mosques and throw bombs in them or hit the people, or they constantly attack us through religion, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for us, it's a bit of a sensitive thing. Like I get annoyed when the Israeli army goes into the mosque or when they lock up Christians in a church for 2 months. It annoys everybody in Palestine, obviously, because you cannot, you know, this is not cool. So I wouldn't do it intentionally, you know, but it's what happened. And, you know, everything is okay.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it literally made international news at the time as well. Everyone was talking about it and I just kept seeing your face everywhere. And what a positive of a dark situation was in the dance music community, you know, so many people were sharing your story and being like, Sama needs our help. Petitions with over 100,000 signatures on from people in support of you. And I guess when you eventually saw that, how did it feel to know that you had that support from the dance music community?
Honestly, it was surreal. Yeah. I didn't believe it in the beginning because I was there and my brother was telling me about it. And I would just have a 10-minute phone call. And then he would tell me, like, these people are signing a petition for you. And I'm like, how do they know me? I'm so excited, you know. It's incredible to see people that you're such a huge fan of. And you always heard about this movement and heard about everything that it does. And then it actually happens to you. And it was overwhelming. Honestly, it was very surreal. Even after I left, even when I saw the petition, I kind of didn't believe it. Mm. I felt that they were making me just feel better about myself. But it was honestly, it was surreal. Can't believe it. Still can't, obviously, from the way I'm blabbering about it.
Yeah, and I guess you've kind of been able to tell your story a bit too. Like, you've just been on the front of DJ Mag. I read that article this morning, actually. I thought it was an amazing article. And, like, in a weird way, it's spreading light on Palestinian techno and the scene as well.
That is kind of what happened through that, you know. There were, with everything, this is a thing I think, maybe, I don't know if it's just a trait that we have, but you kind of always see the dark side and the good side of everything. So in this case as well, there's always a dark side and a good side. So it could be a dark side where they completely ban techno from Palestine and ban even arts and be like, no, everything is not traditional Palestinian and everything is not allowed. Or it can actually spread awareness and now everybody in Palestine knows techno and it can cultivate the scene even more and people can appreciate the DJs even more. So you don't know.
It's an interesting one. And I'd love to know, like, how is techno and dance music and DJing, like, seen in Palestinian culture?
We never knew that people didn't know us this much. That is a very, very big thing that opened our eyes all when I went to prison, is that, oh my God, nobody knows us. We all thought that we were more known, especially after Boiler Room, especially, like, we do a lot of events here. I've been doing events here for over 10 years. But I didn't expect that. Like, in the beginning, it was 10 people. Now there's 600-700 people that come and still nobody knows, you know? So it was a bit shocking, but the scene has been growing for years. Like, since I started my first gig, there was 10 people in it. Literally 10 people in it that asked for their money back. So it's really cool what is happening now. There are way more DJs. You know, we have now over 20 DJs and all really good, very, very good music and very good technique. They really try to learn it. They work together. It's a small community. Like, it's big but small, you know. So everybody knows each other. Everybody works together. It's really cool. It's very raw and underground. It's not yet, you know, very, you know, there are no bouncers. There's no security cameras. Anybody can do whatever they want, you know, because there's, you know, it's like we're all people that know each other and we just want to dance for these couple hours that we get.
Yeah, I love that. And even when you referred to your boiler room there from the 2018 one, which kind of really exploded. I think it's got nearly 8 million views, which is
crazy.
but in the crowd, it's like your friends, like you can tell, you like, you've got the, it's your community right there in shot, right?
Yeah. Like, if you come to any party in Palestine, you will find 90% of the people that were in that video. That's literally how it is here. And that's the beauty about it, you know, that we all grew up together. We built the scene together. We, like, all the artists, if you notice, like, all the artists in the boiler room, they watch each other's shows and they support each other and we dance to each other. And that's how it is in real life. Anybody that does a concert, everybody's there, whether it's hip hop, rap, DJs, live shows, experimental music. Everybody is one and we all listen to all the genres.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The parties look amazing. And I suppose when you were building it over the last 10 years or so, like, what was it that inspired you to create this scene? Like, why did you go, okay, I want to do this. This hasn't been done before here. What was your motivation?
It's the feeling I got when I went to a scene like that. Because when the first time I went raving, I felt a freedom that I've never felt in my life. And I felt that I expressed myself with the anger that I had and everything that was going through my head. And I just found this space, this new space for me. And I really wanted I saw it in Beirut, and it's really hard for Palestinians to go to Lebanon. And depending on what passport they have, it's a bit complicated. And I really just wanted to grab them all and take them there, but I couldn't. So I tried to do it the other way around, which eventually happened. So, but for me, it was basically is that I felt that that feeling that I had at that moment, these people really need to feel it because it's going to help them. And that's why.
No, I love that. And
then when I started seeing it, that's why I continued doing it.
Yeah. And if you've,
because you could see the thing, like the change, the way when they dance, it's like, I don't know, you get that satisfaction when you're playing in front of a crowd that is so into the music and so synced with you But I think also here, the fact that you're also giving them another layer of freedom just gives it also another layer of satisfaction.
Yeah. And as you've chosen being a DJ as your career, like, how has that been perceived in Palestine? Like, I'm guessing it's not a very conventional career path to follow. And have you experienced challenges with that?
Not much, because it wasn't really a career at all. And then it became, you know, even the DJs that are here are not just DJs. The only ones that are just DJs are the ones that do weddings and things like that, because they actually do get a lot of money for a wedding event. And there are a lot of weddings. But DJs in Palestine, usually they work different jobs and they DJ for fun, for themselves, and mostly for, like, they don't really make money from it. So even till now, like, people don't get that I'm a DJ as a job. Yeah, I don't even understand that I'm a DJ as a job. This is such a cool job. It's just weird, you know? It's just like, can't believe somebody pays somebody to be a DJ.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I
love it.
I still ask myself that same question. Are you sure you want to pay me to be here? Okay, I'll take it.
Right? Like, I can actually pay you to be here.
Literally.
I don't mind. Yeah, like, I rave. I love to rave, you know? So I was like, okay, I got to play to a rave for 3 days, so I'm fine, I'll play.
Was it?
But also, it is a different feeling from being in the crowd and being on the stage.
Yeah, it is. Was it, like, quite daunting or scary to, it kind of happened naturally and it wasn't a career, now it is, but because I guess you didn't really have many, like, people to look up to who were doing it where you're from, like, was it a bit, I don't know, was it daunting, or you just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this?
Oh, no, I didn't even think about having it as a career path. It wasn't even on the plan, on the menu. Like, I never even thought that people do become DJs, you know? Although I have a lot of DJs that I'm a fan of, but it was always just a hobby. I never even thought that I could ever make it as a career. So I never focused on it being a career. I just went into cinema. I still played. I love DJing, but I never thought that anybody can just become a DJ, like, international DJ. It's just crazy. And it really happened by luck as well, you know, like, by festivals and people seeing it and being like, okay, I want to book you. And I'm like, okay, cool. People want to book me. Interesting. Yeah. Because also, like, my friends, okay, so my friends who are the biggest DJs in Beirut, they're some of the greatest DJs I've ever seen in my life play. And they're still not international. They are DJs in Beirut. So for me, I always thought that was going to be the DJ in Palestine, and that's it. And that's where I played. But that's why, I mean, I push people more to get out of, like, I try to help, because now I know that there is a way to get to become, to do what you want as a job. But it's a bit of a complicated reroute, but there is a way. Very long, but complicated, but there is.
Yeah, but you are paving that direction for, like, the future stars, right? Of this scene.
Trying.
You are.
Trying my best.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today I read in your New York Times interview, which was a great article, and they described you as representing a kind of cultural resistance that helps assert and humanize Palestinian identity on the world stage. So cultural resistance, that's what they're saying you represent. Like, do you see what you're doing, in given the context of the world we're living in now, do you see it as that, as by you being a DJ?
I try. The thing is, I've never tried to be a politician or an activist. Obviously, like, I am active about issues that I care about, but I never tried to be, you know, a thing that does that. But my existence on its own and being part of this culture and this scene and this place made me become that without me, like, trying or focusing on it, which is a bit terrifying because now I have to hold the responsibility of all that. And it's scary because I have to say the right words all the time and, you know, do the right thing all the time, which is hard. Mm.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's kind of like you're like representing a whole nation of people. It's a big thing.
Exactly. And people that I really care about, and in a case that is so sensitive and with a cause that is very complicated, and that makes it so hard and so pressuring. It's a bit terrifying. Yeah. But it's also a huge honor, you know, like it's something that I've, you know, I guess every Palestinian has always tried to do something for the country and never really finds a way to, because it's really hard to. It's a really complicated situation. So finding any way that can actually help is empowering in a way.
Yeah. And today, obviously, with everything that's going on with Palestine fighting to be recognized as an official state, how is it for youth culture today and creative scenes? You know, it must be difficult to keep things going in whilst you're living through that.
Definitely, yeah. Especially when a lot of people that come listen to you ask you, what does the word Palestine mean? But, you know, it's not just having a country. It's way more than just that. You know, we were a country that we were ethnically cleansed from and completely deleted from everywhere. And we're trying to gain that back. We're trying to gain our freedom back. We're trying to gain our basic human rights. And we're trying to it's not just about a country. It's about existence. It's about an identity that they're completely deleting. And that is what we're fighting for. And we will keep doing that because they're deleting us step by step. And hell no.
And just for the benefit of, because this podcast is going to be, well, I'm from the UK, so like most of our listeners might be based in the UK. So can you just give us a bit of an insight into what it's like at the moment for you in Palestine and your sort of day to day, you know, how it is for you?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Pre the what happened now or post? Well, now the West Bank is way worse. The checkpoints are completely way worse. The Israeli army is getting more aggressive. Gaza is in a horrid situation, obviously, as everybody knows. But the worst part and the biggest change is happening on the Palestinians that live inside Israel, because basically the racism now is quadruple. The police brutality is 10 times, and they wanted to expel, I think, 12 families from Sheikh Jarrah. Now it's all of them. And three more villages that they're completely ethnically cleansing, other than a whole village that they're demolishing. That was, you know, and they're now making people demolish their own homes in Silwan or pay for the demolition of them. So it's really bad. And sadly, in the UK, the people that signed all the petitions and everything and the government said that they're looking into it. Today, they got the reply that the UK still supports Israel and will not condemn Israel for all the crimes it did. So they just like kind of postponed everything till everybody slept. And now they told us, well, no, you're staying where you are.
God.
And actually you're going to get more back by Israel, basically, because Israel is going to make us pay the price for what we just did, for speaking up. And that's what they're doing. They're like literally like the stories that I'm hearing from my friends from there are terrifying. And what we're seeing on the news is even more terrifying. And Israel is not looking like it's getting better. So there's still hope. We still have hope, even with all the darkness that comes through. But it's the situation is really bad, but the people are still fighting and the youth is standing strong, which is very inspiring to all of us. And the movements that are happening in the UK are really good and they should continue on going because they're really helping.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the situation.
Yeah, no, thank you for being so honest and open about that. It's appreciated. Cheers. And I think people need to understand and hear from, you know, people like yourself who are living it. And I suppose regarding like youth culture and you know, the community that you've helped create, I suppose a lot of people will be looking to technos and parties and music and having a community as a form of escapism.
Yeah, there are. It depends. Some people find it a way of like resisting and like expressing, and some people find it escapism. And I think that's the beauty about music, and especially techno music, is not that direct. Mm. Does it have lyrics that tell you you should escape or you should fight or you should, you know? So everybody can use the space and the sounds around him for his own gain in his own way, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And going back to like, well, resistance, I suppose, but in terms of like you having challenges other than the arrest that we spoke about earlier, like have you faced any other resistances in terms of people trying to stop you from, you know, DJing or doing your thing in Palestine? Have there been any other instances like that?
Never. No. Because it was never about the DJing. That's the thing. It was never about the techno or the style of music. The people got offended by the location and what they heard. And the thing is that the story got bigger. Like in the beginning, we were in the bazaar where the shops are. And then the story grew for us to be in the courtyard of the mosque. And then some people thought we were inside it. And that's what bothered people. It's not the style of music. It's the location, the way it was made. That's what bothered people, because I've been playing techno for 12 years. It was never the music. If it's a hip hop party, if it's a commercial party, if it's a techno party, they all get closed at midnight.
Wow, midnight.
And that's the law here, which is a bit annoying. Yeah. We're a small city, so everything is residential.
Right.
There are people everywhere. You know, whatever place you rent to play music in, there are houses around it. And the thing is that we are very, like, our cities are very much closed, and we have three different areas. So we can only use area A, you know, like area B and area... There's three different areas in one tiny city that we can use parts of, and other parts we cannot, because Israel has control of it, and can, you know? So it's not like we can just go anywhere and do anything. We're very limited in the space we can use. And in that space, people live.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's a bit annoying when they have to listen to techno at 2 a.m. So I get it. Because when there's a wedding next to my house, I get annoyed at 2 a.m. And weddings are the only thing that is allowed to stay after midnight. So I'm like, oh, come on, guys.
What about a wedding where there's a techno DJ afterwards? Does that work? Does that qualify?
Yeah. Wedding DJs actually play kind of like a lot of genres. They do play techno, they play Arabic, they play dubke, everything. Mm. But a wedding is an excuse, and people don't get mad at people making just a random party and people are not sleeping because of it. That's a little bit more annoying. A wedding at least has a reason.
Yeah. So I suppose everything we've spoken about, and, you know, everything you're living day to day, you know, having gone to prison for DJing in the mosque, and everything you've lived through so far, like, how has this affected you over the last few months? You know, thinking about your safety, your freedom as well.
This is why I'm not talking to my therapist in the past couple of months, because I just really don't want to dive into that. So in the beginning, it was a bit more... terrifying from everything that is here, from the people that are in Palestine. I think I also had a different image of what was going to happen when I left. But nothing happened, which was good. People are supportive. If I run into people, they just tell me that they're sorry for what happened with me. So it was a little bit of the ups and downs, you know? And then what happened now happened, and that just, like, it's just it's just, yeah. it's nothing is calming. Yeah, it was 3 months of stress over that. Then I refilmed the Beatport, which was also a lot of work. And after the Beatport streamed, there was a war all over again here. So had to deal with that. We just kind of got out of that. And yeah. So I don't know how I feel. I haven't even thought about that.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I suppose also your career, how do you think your career will be affected from this?
Not sure, actually, because everything is completely still on pause with Corona. But I already have a couple of bookings for the summer and a couple for the end of the year. So I'm hoping that it just goes good.
Yeah.
I hope that the world doesn't close up again and we get to play music a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be great to see you at a festival at some point and get back to it.
I'm so excited. I'm supposed to be in the UK in August and I hope nothing happens from now till then.
Let's hope.
Bank holiday. We need
it. We do. I've just got a couple more questions.
Go ahead.
I love that you use a lot of traditional Palestinian samples to make new music. And I'd love to know, like, what inspires you to do that? Is it, do you kind of want to just represent your culture and all these aspects of what you do?
Part of it is that, I think, a big part of it is that, but also the probably that I always kind of also liked folk. I used to dance dabke till I was 18. I still dance dabke, obviously, but I used to dance with, like, actual, like, folkloric bands, and I, like, know most of the folkloric songs. My aunt, my cousins, we all dance folk music, and we love it. So it has to do with that, and it had to do with a project that we wanted to do that has to do with archiving the historical sounds of Palestine. So we were doing this project where we got artists to remix historical sounds and traditional sounds, and they're really cool sounds. And also we need to preserve them because otherwise they will die with time.
Yeah, and it's a great way to
keep history alive.
Yeah, reimagine it, I suppose, rework it.
Yeah. Cool. Exactly.
What is your message to, you know, to anyone listening now, maybe to fellow Palestinians and who are in a similar situation, about, yeah, your message for the future, I suppose?
Keep looking at the bright side, I guess, because everything has a dark side and a bright side, and you just keep gotta know what you believe and what you're working towards, what you've done in your life, and what you still need to do to reach where you want to reach. That's something that I think helped me a lot in life, is knowing what you've done, what you achieved, being happy about it, but also knowing what you still need to achieve and everything you need to work on and making a plan for it and keep going. Yeah. And always look at the bright side. Because if you just look at the dark side, you'll just give up. So don't give up.
Yeah. Love that. I mean, yeah, you're a deeply inspiring, strong person, and I think it's a real honor to be talking to you today. And even through everything you've been going through and are going through, like, you're still giving this positivity out. And I think that's really incredible.
Thank you.
So, well, yeah, I just wanted
to say good. That. I thought I was a depressed person. That's good. I'm giving positivity.
you're smiling through it.
I'm glad. Thank you so much, really. And yeah, I'm smiling through it. That's my technique in dealing with everything in life. And it's, I think, a bit of a healthy technique, I think. I'm not sure, but I hope so.
So this podcast is called Utopia Talks, and it's all about achieving utopia, a place of freedom, creativity, diversity, the place we all want to get to.
Utopia.
So,
Utopia.
Yeah, utopia. What is your utopia? And yeah, what does the word utopia mean to you?
Oof. Oof, well, that is so, that's a dream, you know, that's the dream. It resembles the dream, the very far-fetched dream that I guess we all are working towards. And that's why we keep smiling and we keep doing what we do, is that we want everybody to be free, everybody to be safe, everybody to be, you know, like, comfortable where they are, to not feel oppressed or pressured or, you know. But sadly, it's a very long way to go. Hopefully we get there, but
yeah,
it's freedom for all and equality for all.
Yeah.
I guess.
And in the meantime, what's keeping you going? What's inspiring you daily?
I don't know. Actually, now, right now, I don't know. Before, I would have told you that I wanted to build something and build a scene here and make a voice for... I'm not sure how much I still have hope, but I'm going to say that as well. To build a scene, to build a name for the Middle East, to showcase what we... like. It's not just about showcasing DJs. It is showing the people that are here, because we get judged like the whole Arab world gets judged by the stories they see on TV or read in books that are very weird. But it's not really that, and people need to open their eyes, because this is the years of, what do they call it, knowledge, where social media takes over everything and you can actually see everything. So now nothing has an excuse, and especially ignorance doesn't have an excuse, because you can know and you can do. And that is the reason why we keep going, because we are seeing this tiny hope in this new way of approach of and the new generation. They're doing incredible things.
Shout out the new generation.
Shout out to the new generation. These are the two things that gave us a little bit of a push again to, you know what, no, there is a little bit of hope, because they're doing something that is interesting and very inspiring.
Brilliant. Sama, thank you so much. It's been great to chat to you. Appreciate it. Thank you
for having me.
Pleasure.
This was epic. Really glad talking to you, and I hope we meet soon.
Love and respect to Sama for sharing her story with us and the incredible influence she's had on the music scene in Palestine. Big up Katie Baxter for producing this episode, and let me know what you thought at Jaguar Worldwide on the socials, and I'll see you guys next Wednesday.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.